I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Democratic women running in suburban Philadelphia for the U.S. House of Representatives did well in yesterday's Pennsylvania primary. Mary Gay Scanlon prevailed in the 5th Congressional District. Madeline Dean in the 4th, Susan Wilde in the 7th, Chrissy Houlihan ran unopposed in the 6th. The only one who came up short was Rachel Reddick, who lost to Scott Wallace in the 1st. Redistricting, retirements, and resignations were all factors this year, scrambling the congressional map and opening up seats. Currently, Pennsylvania has 18 House seats and none are held by women. There will be some tough battles in the fall since Pennsylvania is considered a battleground in the fight over control of the House. The parties are ready to invest millions of dollars in key races. In other statewide races, tough-talking Republican state senator and businessman Scott Wagner will take on Pennsylvania's mild-mannered governor Tom Wolf. Lou Barletta, who was endorsed by President Trump, is challenging incumbent U.S. Senator Bob Casey. Liberal Democrat John Fetterman beat incumbent Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack and will battle it out with Jeff Bartos in the general election. Well, today on Radio Times, the winners and losers and what it all means. Here with us in our Philadelphia studios is Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, someone we call on all the time when we want to talk about state politics and elections. Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here, Marty.
Chris Borick is joining us by telephone. He's a political science professor at Muhlenberg College. Again, someone we call on. Chris, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
And we have another Chris Potter, cross state in Pittsburgh. He's politics and government editor for WESA-FM. Chris Potter, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hey, nice to be with all three of you.
And to our listeners, we want to know from you who you voted for and why. Here's that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dave, let me put this to you because you're sitting across from me. Much was made of the redistricting and would people know where to go and how confused would primary day be in Pennsylvania. Any way to know whether that came true or not?
I think people that bothered to vote realized how districts had changed. Remember, this happens every 10 years anyway for tens of thousands of voters, so that was okay. You know, you identified the key factors here in what is really a seismic shift in state politics, particularly in this region: redistricting, retirements, and then we would also add the president, because there's clearly energy among Democrats that produced a new crop of candidates and I think an enthusiastic crop of voters that accounts for this.
And Chris Potter, out in Pittsburgh, did you see similar enthusiasm for candidates, whether Republican or Democrat?
I think what we saw is a couple of state House races where we had candidates backed by the Democratic Socialists of America who were very, very enthusiastic. Their base really turned out for them. But turnout here, you know, for the most part, was pretty low, as Dave kind of suggested. So we definitely had pockets of a very mobilized base, some upsets where incumbents faced primary challengers and lost. But generally, over the whole landscape, I wouldn't say there was a ton of enthusiasm in a lot of these races.
I do want to get to the 14th and the 17th out your way, Chris, because that of course, yeah, had to do with the special election and then, of course, yesterday's primary. Chris, let me get you to weigh in on this as well. What do you see as you look across the Commonwealth and you see the results of yesterday's primary? What do you see?
Marty, I see, as both Dave and Chris alluded to, a lot of those themes playing out that we've seen nationwide and people have focused on this year. Of course, as this year has been described as the year of the woman, we've seen unprecedented performances by female candidates throughout the state, especially in the Southeast, you know, winning Democratic primaries in the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th. That's just not common in Pennsylvania, especially given our abysmal record of having zero women in Congress right now. So that is a sea change, and it's not hyperbole to say so. We also, on the state level, we saw not a lot of excitement for the top of the ticket races for Democrats, because there was no competition in
right.
the gubernatorial and Senate races, with Governor Wolf and Senator Casey running unopposed. So that I think might have dampened a little bit of the statewide energy on the Democratic side. And on the Republican side, we saw the party largely turn to candidates at the top of their ticket that are firmly aligned with President Trump, thus making this fall even more about the president than it otherwise might have been in the Commonwealth.
Well, interesting. You've got people endorsed by socialists and by President Trump, and perhaps that tells us about the world that we're living in here. Dave, let me go back to you, and even just looking at some of the races that ring Philadelphia, and including Philadelphia as well, you covered a number of these races. Interestingly, that Rachel Reddick was not able to beat Scott Wallace in the first congressional district, which is largely Bucks County, a little piece of Montgomery County. What do you make of her loss?
Money really matters in elections. Rachel Reddick had the backing of Emily's List, which was helpful. But her opponent, Scott Wallace, who is the grandson of Henry Wallace, the kind of semi-socialist vice president of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he has spent much of his career in the Washington area and in Africa running a family foundation, and he is independently wealthy. He put $2.5 million of his own fortune into that campaign.
Wow.
That buys a lot of TV time, a lot of mailers, a lot of election day workers, and probably made the difference. Rachel Reddick did have a couple of things that weren't advantages for her. She had been registered Republican until relatively recently before she entered the primary, and her opponent really hammered her on that. But I think probably the money made a huge, huge difference. There was environmental activist Steve Bakker, who was also in there, ran a credible campaign, but came up well short.
I mean, she called him basically a carpetbagger because he hadn't lived in the district for much of his adult life.
Correct. He had roots here but left as a young man to work in Washington in the Senate and really had not been a resident here until recently.
Let me play Madeline Dean. And am I pronouncing her first name correctly?
Madeline.
Madeline Dean. I had a feeling when I said it I was saying it incorrectly. But let me just play something that she said last night. And she did win in the 4th Congressional District, getting the Democratic nomination. This is Madeline Dean.
Today the voters spoke. And they spoke with clarity. And they voted resoundingly for progressive leadership. And they voted to say that Montgomery County deserves progressive leadership.
This was a race that she was pitted against Shira Goodman and also Joe Huffel, Dave.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because there were originally three progressive women who filed to run in this race. State Representative Mary Jo Daly of Narberth also in it. She, you know, in April said, you know what, this is going to be a tough battle. We will split the vote and, as she put it in her statement, blow the opportunity to have a progressive woman in Washington. So she dropped out of the race, endorsed Madeline Dean at that point. Emily's List, the big feminist political action committee, came in. So Madeline Dean cruised to a pretty easy victory there. You know, one other just interesting little observation about what we saw in the Philadelphia region, Marty. You know, before this election and before the redistricting, there were 6 seats here. 3 were held by Democrats. 3 in the suburbs were held by Republicans. And Philadelphia had 3 representatives in Congress whose address were in Philadelphia. They all were, you know, Bob Brady, Dwight Evans, and Brendan Ball. All had sort of hybrid city suburban districts.
Right.
With the redistricting and the retirement of Bob Brady, Philadelphia lost one of its representatives. Now only 2 hang their hats in Philadelphia, and 4 are in the suburbs.
Chris Potter, let me go out to you. And I mentioned some other races. This would be for the 14th and the 17th congressional district. And this involved originally Connor Lamb, who was able to win in a special election. What happened in these 2 districts?
Right. So as you say, we had a special election in the 18th district just 2 months ago, which Connor Lamb won. He beat Rick Saccone. Since that election was held, this new map has gone into effect. Connor Lamb and many of those who voted for him have now been drawn into the new 17th district, which also includes neighborhoods, communities that are currently represented by Republican Keith Rothfuss. So there was a primary on both the Republican and Democratic side, obviously, in the 17th. Keith Rothfuss and Connor Lamb were unopposed, and they will face each other in November. Now, the rest of that 18th district that Connor Lamb won just 2 months ago has been drawn differently now. It's now a more rural district, numbered the 14th, and it's a more conservative district. And what we had on the Republican side was a fight between Rick Saccone, the loser in that special election, and a state senator from Allegheny County named Guy Reschenthaler, who actually had sought to be the Republican nominee in that special election and lost to Rick Saccone. So this is kind of a rematch between those two Republicans. Republicans. And I'm sorry for confusing the heck out of your listeners okay. anywhere else in the state. But Guy Reschenthaler won that race last night by about 10.5 points. And, you know, you talk to people and a big factor there was simply the fact that Rick Saccone had lost that special election. That old 18th district had gone for Donald Trump by nearly 20 percentage points in 2016. National Republicans spent more than $10 million in outside advertising and independent efforts to carry him across the finish line. And he was unable to close the deal. So Guy Reschenthaler basically said, you don't want that to happen again, do you? And a majority of Republican voters agreed. There will be a Democrat in that race as well. Another female Democrat, actually, a woman named Bibiana Borio, who's from Westmoreland County, which is where a lot of the votes are in this new district. She won very convincingly. A former executive from Ford Motor Company has roots in Westmoreland County. And so we'll see a matchup there. But I'm guessing that in the world of sort of getting excited for female candidates, it's a slightly tougher sell for Ms. Borio than it is for the candidates out there in the
East. So Saccone won, lost two elections in what,
right.
2.5 months? Well, that's all got to be close
yes.
to a record.
Yeah.
That's got to
yeah.
hurt.
Yeah. Well, for those of us who are Pirates fans, we're sort of used to that kind of performance from time to time out here. But yeah, it's been a painful right. spring for Mr. Saccone.
Chris Bork, I'm doing first and last names because we have two Chris's on the show. So to you, Chris Bork, does this new map more fairly represent Pennsylvania's voters for the U.S. House?
I think it does. You know, the process that was in place to try and get to this place was not really the one that I think Pennsylvania wants to embrace on a regular basis, you know, having the courts intervene in a very haphazard process, if you will, in many ways. But the product, Marty, the product, I think it's hard to argue that it's not more representative of our existing county and political jurisdiction lines. The Southeast is an exhibit in that, and that I think anybody that looked at the previous map and saw those tortured lines that cut through Montgomery and Chester and Delaware County would say that they really made very little sense other than to protect incumbents and one party advantage. So I think it's a clearer, more obvious structuring of our congressional districts. The effects are also pretty clear. They've made Democrats more competitive. Mm-hmm. And on the margin in a lot of these districts, I think the court at the end of the day tipped those districts even a little bit more. You look at a place like the 4th Congressional District the 1st Congressional District, some of those decisions that were made at the ends of the district have made them even more Democratic than perhaps some other options could. You look at a district like the 7th up in the Lehigh Valley, you see the same scenario play out where...
Chris, I got to jump in here only because they're playing my song. That
sure.
means we're up on a break.
Okay.
We are talking about yesterday's primary in Pennsylvania. And we've got comments coming in. RadioTimes@WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia, talking about yesterday's Pennsylvania primary, the winners, the losers, what it all means, certainly for the Commonwealth, for the upcoming general election, and possibly what it could mean for the U.S. House of Representatives. Chris Potter joining us from the studios of WESA-FM in Pittsburgh. He is a politics and government editor for WESA. Dave Davies with us here in our Philadelphia studio, senior reporter for WHYY, and joining us by telephone, Chris Bork, political science professor at Muhlenberg College. We want to know who you voted for and why. Here's that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Let me just play a clip from Scott Wallace. Dave, you had mentioned him before the break, but I just want our listeners to hear a bit of what he said when he won the 1st Congressional District.
We have begun to flip Pennsylvania's 1st District. And we have begun to retake the House. And we've begun to make America sane again.
Chris, is it too soon to say if whoever wins Chris, thank you, Chris Borick. Dave just whispered to me, Chris Borick.
Which one?
Which Chris? Chris Borick. Is it too soon to say if Pennsylvania will add Democrats to the House of Representatives?
No, I don't think it is, Marty. The redistricting that we were talking about before the break certainly has made a number of districts look very likely to flip to the Democratic side, and those are in places like the 4th and 5th congressional districts outside of Philadelphia. I'd be very surprised if Democrats don't emerge from those districts, given the registrant advantage and performance of voters in the last presidential election, if those don't turn to the Democratic side this fall. And also, there's a lot of other districts that I think are going to be very competitive, and Democrats have legitimate chances. And again, they all appear to be in the Southeast if we move it all the way up into the Lehigh Valley in the 6th, the 7th, and the district that we were just talking about in the 1st, which I think should be very competitive. So if Democrats are to take back the House in 2018, Pennsylvania is going to be pivotal in getting the Democrats to the point where they could actually do that. There's just too many districts here that are in play.
You know, my count on that, Marty, is that when three of the women who were nominated last night have clear advantages in November, and if they are elected, that would be a net 2 seats flipped from Republican to Democrat, which would give the Democrats 5 rather than the current, 7 of the 18 members. They have a shot at 3 others. One of them is the Bucks County seat. The other one is the one up in the Allentown area. And then that seat out west where Connor Lamb is going to take on that Keith Rothfuss, which Chris mentioned. If things go their way, and, you know, it's a long time until November, you know, if the economy's strong and Trump does good things in Korea and the investigations fizzle, then maybe things look different. But at the moment, you could readily imagine a situation where Democrats end up with 10 of the 18 seats rather than the current 5.
Chris Potter, can you look into your crystal ball? Do you see anything?
Well, I mean, I would say let's assume a good year for Democrats, but not a precedent-shattering year. Connor Lamb has a good shot against Keith Rothfuss. But, of course, as I was saying before, much of the district he represents is very likely to go Republican, again, barring some sort of cataclysmic outcome for Republicans in November. So right now, Pittsburgh and its immediate surroundings are represented by 2 Democrats and 1 Republican. It's possible to imagine a good outcome for Democrats in southwestern Pennsylvania that ends up the same way. It ends up as a push, essentially. Connor Lamb wins the 17th, but the 14th district, the old 18th, goes into Republican hands. So we're not seeing quite the same level, I think, of opportunity that you are out east.
And millions of dollars are going to be invested, Chris Borick, in the general election here in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's if you want predictions with high degrees of certainty, that's going to be one, Marty. Pennsylvania is an expensive place to run an election in. It's expensive at a statewide level. It's expensive in the major media markets like the Southeast. And there's going to be all competition for those airwaves. So if I'm, you know, a commercial broadcast station, I'm pretty excited with the array of commercials.
You're going to make a lot of money this year. Yes.
Yeah, two rich guys running for governor with plenty to spend.
We got deep pockets there. There'll be a lot of money coming into the U.S. Senate race, which we really haven't had a chance to talk about much, but that's going to be competing for airwaves. And then you have a district. Just think about it. This is so unprecedented. And yesterday was so unprecedented with competition. Usually primaries in Pennsylvania are really sleepy affairs with little competition. So just the array of things that we're talking about right now tells you how much competition is out there. And so there's going to be enormous demand for media buys in all throughout Southeast Pennsylvania, including the Lehigh Valley, which is in the Philadelphia media market. So get ready for just an avalanche of money being spent and ads.
Well, Dave, something you told me before going on the air, looking at Local 98 here in Philadelphia, a very powerful union. How did they do yesterday?
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, this is the biggest spending political committee in the state, the Local 98 of the Electricians Union, who represent our beloved engineers here at WHYY. We always have to disclose that. They spent over $500,000 on three races this year. One of them was the congressional campaign in the new 5th District, mostly Delaware County. They had a South Philadelphia candidate named Rich Laser, former deputy mayor to Mayor Kenney, and they put a ton of money into him. And then also in a two state legislative seats, one of them in South Philadelphia, which was won by former WHYY reporter Elizabeth Fiedler. We're disclosing all over the place here.
Well, and let me add former producer on Radio Times.
Right, right.
To add to that.
She ran a remarkable campaign, and her opponent, J.R. Rowan, was a ward leader in the 39th Ward, Democratic ward leader, and got $112,000 from the Electricians Union alone and plenty more, and she overcame that. I think it says something about kind of the shifting demographics of Philadelphia and more independent-minded voters out there. And then there was a race in the Northeast where that same union put $75,000 into a candidate, a building trades candidate named Sean Kilkenny. He fell short to an immigration lawyer named Joe Hohenstein. That's for the open seat that was vacated by John Taylor, the Republican who was a friend of Philadelphia in the eyes of many Democrats. But you clearly are seeing a movement in the direction of independence, and money helps, but sometimes it's not enough.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Let me read some comments. An email from David. I voted for Scott Wallace. This is in the 1st Congressional District because it takes money to fight money, and he has a lot of it. Plus, he appears to be a good man of integrity. We've got a lot of Fetterman comments here, and I do want to get to them, but let me play York County businessman and state senator Scott Wagner. He is the Republican candidate who's going to take on the current governor. Here he is speaking at the Republican event last night.
I'm speaking directly to all the Democrats and independents in Pennsylvania. If you want your school taxes eliminated, vote for Scott Wagner and Jeff Bartos.
Yeah! Chris Bork, let me go back to you setting up this race for governor in Pennsylvania. This, of course, is Wagner taking on the incumbent Tom Wolf. What do you see there?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting race. You have an incumbent in Tom Wolf that, if you look at the polls, is in good shape, but not great shape in terms of his public approval. He has some record to claim. You know, he's been able to increase education spending like he said he would coming into the election, but on a lot of other campaign pledges, he's not been successful. He never did get that extraction tax on Marcellus Shale. He can attribute that to a legislature that might not have been a good partner. He also didn't get the tax reform on areas like property tax, which has been a holy grail of Pennsylvania politics for years, to do something about that. And you could already see that Scott Wagner is targeting him. So yeah. Races like this are often referendums on the current governor. In this race, it's going to be a little different because of Scott Wagner's policy positions, his style, that are so closely aligned with President Trump. And in midterm elections, it's often a lot about the president. And I think in this particular cycle, it's going to even be more about the president. So Scott Wagner, along with, you know, the top of the ticket Republican senatorial nominee in Lou Barletta, are really going to be tied to the president. They're going to be tied to the president's agenda. They're going to be tied to the president's style. In the case of Wagner, the primary exposed some character issues that I think are going to come back in the general election. And it's going to be, as we talked about before, a race where both candidates have lots of resources, lots of money, and fairly deep pockets, and a war chest in Tom Wolf's case that he could dump or dive into that he didn't have to use in the primary. So expect a competitive race.
How about out in Western Pennsylvania, Chris Potter? How do you see that race?
Well, I would say, and this is just sort of anecdotal, scattered evidence on my part, I think there's a key difference between Donald Trump and Scott Wagner. And that is, I have met a lot of union voters, a lot of labor guys who voted for Donald Trump who will not vote for Scott Wagner. Because of some of the positions he's taken. Some of them are still angry about some of the stunts, I guess, as they would say, that he pulled with unemployment compensation centers, things like that. Wagner is obviously a very vociferous critic of unions. Donald Trump was not that guy, and in fact, you know, won in Western Pennsylvania and a lot of places by pitching a kind of union friendly message. I don't know, you know, how much he's really done for that constituency at this point. There are a surprising dearth of new steel mill construction here in Western Pennsylvania based on his promises. But I do think there's a difference here. Wagner has more of a record than Donald Trump did, and I don't know how well that record's going to play amongst some folks. We obviously here in Allegheny County were in a somewhat different position. We had his two rivals were both from here, Paul Mango and Laura Ellsworth.
Right.
And it was mainly Mango's advertisements that Chris was referring to before in terms of these kind of character issues coming up for Wagner. And it'll be interesting to see how much of that sticks, whether that leaves a mark going into the fall. But, you know, I certainly talk to Republicans even in Allegheny County who, you know, normally out here in the West we tend to vote our own. But they had really just felt that some of those Mango attacks had really gone over the top. And I think that may have hurt him as much as may have hurt Mango, as at least as much as it did to Wagner himself.
And Dave, yeah. You interviewed all three and did profiles.
Right. And Mango certainly backed off of those attacks, I think,
yes.
Some at the end of the campaign, because I think his polling showed it wasn't working. You know, voters are going to get a real choice here, right? I mean, you've got a governor that believes in increasing funding for education and healthcare and an opponent who says we have a spending problem, and he's going to go hard at that. I think Wagner has some charisma because he's plain spoken, but that hurts him at times. One thing to note is about the stakes in this election, which is going to bring some outside money in. Mm-hmm. Whoever holds the governor's chair could have a veto over the next congressional districts after the 2020 census. As things currently stand, our congressional districts are drawn not by some citizens' commission, which there's debate about, but
right.
If the current system continues, it's a regular bill in the legislature. And the reason we got such highly gerrymandered districts last time was that you had a Republican governor ready to sign a bill enacted by Republican legislative leaders. And Wolf is in a position to veto that next time. If he loses, it's a different ballgame. So I think that is one thing that's going to attract some national money to this race.
And these are all the moving parts when it comes to elections. Let me play one more clip. This is John Fetterman running for lieutenant governor. He did get the Democratic nomination. Mike Stack did not. He's the current lieutenant governor. But let me play a clip of John Fetterman speaking to supporters in Braddock, where he is mayor.
Feel is gratitude to everybody that voted for us, gratitude to all my wonderful supporters, my campaign team that, you know, we drove 40,000 miles in 55 counties, you know, carrying this message that every county matters.
It's so interesting. We have a bunch of comments of folks coming in saying, John Fetterman. Let me go back to you, Chris Borick, as someone who covers the state, generally speaking. He had actually run for the U.S. Senate. He had been a Bernie Sanders supporter. He'd actually been a guest on Radio Times. I think he's probably been a guest on everybody's show because he's a really fascinating guy. What do you make of his candidacy?
Oh, I think he's one of the most fascinating figures in Pennsylvania politics in a very long time. Marty, his approach to politics, you know, as a mayor of a town, Chris could speak more about Braddock, but you know, a town that's been hard hit over the years by economic displacement and his work to try to revitalize that city. He's on so many issues unabashedly progressive, but also pragmatic in terms of trying to re-engage a place like Braddock. He's Harvard educated.
He's a big guy too.
Tallest state official in the country.
You know, maybe 6'8". I'm not sure. Folks could correct me.
With a bunch of tattoos. Yeah,
And tattooed with a goatee. He's definitely not your central casting political figure that you would say. So I think he's going to be an absolute focus of a lot of attention in this election cycle. And his uniqueness I think brings questions of just how electable he is in a lot of cases. Lieutenant governor races are about the top of the ticket, so usually we don't think a lot about him. Certainly, I think he's a rising star in Pennsylvania politics, especially in this very different age that we're in right now. I'm fascinated by the guy.
Yeah. Chris Potter, let me get you in on this because you probably know him better than the rest
yes.
of us. And I read that if he does win, he doesn't want to live in the lieutenant governor's mansion. How is he scrambling PA politics?
I mean, I think, as Chris said, you know, he had this run for Senate as a progressive. He is a fascinating figure with this story to tell about Braddock. He will provide a striking contrast both visually and in terms of presentation with his running mate, Tom Wolf. I certainly don't think he raises any more electability questions than Mike Stack did. But generally, I think, you know, generally in terms of this moment here, and we saw this in some down ballot races out here in Allegheny County as well, what you're really seeing, I think, is these parties in a state of flux, and they are looking for answers, and the voters are looking for something that is not the same old, same old. I've mentioned this before. We had a couple of Democratic Socialist candidates very much in the spirit of Bernie Sanders topple two longtime incumbents here in Allegheny mm-hmm. County with very well-established political names here. These are relatives of Jay Costa, the leader of Senate Democrats who just
lost last
night. Were
those state house races, Chris?
Yeah, yes, they were. Yeah, it was Dom Costa in the 21st and his distant cousin Paul Costa, the brother of Jay, in the 34th. These are well-known names out here, and they lost big. It was like 30-point margins we're talking here. They were just absolutely out-hustled. Money matters, as Dave said earlier, but that grassroots fervor is really key as well. And John has been able he was able to do it in his Senate race to just sort of light people's fire, to light the imagination of people about, you know, what you can say in politics and what you can kind of do. And I think that's the spirit that he's really capturing here. It'll be interesting to see if he can carry it through to November.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Chris Potter, the voice you just heard, Chris Borick, and Dave Davies, talking about the Pennsylvania primary yesterday, what the results mean. And we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Lots of comments. I'll read them after this short break. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about yesterday's Pennsylvania primary, the results, what it indicates about the state's voters, the implications for respective political parties. And we're taking a look at the general election, the all-important general election. And again, our guests are Chris Potter, politics and government editor for WESA-FM in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Chris Borick, political science professor at Muhlenberg College, also in Pennsylvania, and Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, joining us here in our Philadelphia studios. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know who you voted for and why. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a bunch of comments here. A tweet from Violetta. Do you have turnout numbers for Democrat versus Republican voters? I'm going to let that hang out there. An email from Adam. John Fetterman did so poorly in southeastern Pennsylvania, but I'm excited that he won. Why was he not more popular in Philadelphia? An email from Brendan from Bucks County. I voted for Scott Wallace because he has the best chance of beating Fitzpatrick, and he supports Medicare for all and campaign finance reform. An email from Natalie. I voted in the 4th district. I'm a woman. I was happy to vote for Madeline Dean. I think there was a real impulse to say that people will vote only for women for lieutenant governor. I voted for Fetterman instead of Nina Ahmed. An email from Joan. I'm very happy that progressive John Fetterman and Chris Robb won. I'm unhappy that Barletta came up on a white supremacist ACLU list, won the Republican primary. I'm disappointed that Emily's list went against their own policy and came out for Madeline Dean and donated $200,000 to her campaign. Just getting a sense of how people are feeling about the results of the election. Chris Borick, let me go back to you. Do people meaning voters, do they vote because they are inspired by someone or because they're angry about something or both?
You know, my academic answer is going to be both.
Okay, fair
Marty,
enough.
of course. You know, we vote often out of inspiration. We find a candidate that we really can relate to both personally and ideologically, and I think you saw a lot of that in this cycle. I really do. I think for Democrats, there were attractive candidates. We've talked about the gender issue and a lot of the pent-up energy to support women in a state that has a terrible record on this and this particular year. So those are attractive qualities. They're bringing people out. But we also know that often anger and resentment play a role in attracting voters. And historically, in midterm elections, after a president comes into office, especially when they're not that high in terms of their approval ratings, it does energize the opposition. And I think we see a degree of that going on in Pennsylvania right now. But across the board, Democrats were campaigning as being the strongest voices against the president in almost all of these districts and both the state and congressional level. And so I think that's going to play a very key role in this election cycle.
I'm going to put this to you, Chris Potter. Do you have turnout numbers for the Dem or GOP voters? Do you have those?
Not for statewide, definitely not. I'm worried about my own little backyard here. But I think the prediction, at least in Allegheny County, was about a 20% turnout. And my just sort of gut sense is that that's not far off the mark here.
20%. Wow.
Yeah, not a lot going on in terms of turnout here.
And Adam's question, John Fetterman, why did John Fetterman do so poorly in Southeast Pennsylvania? I don't know, Dave, if you have thought about that or looked at that.
Well, it's part of geography. I mean, Mike Stack is a ward leader from Northeast Philadelphia, and so he was carried on a lot of recommended ballots by ward leaders. Remember that in low information elections, these recommendations of local officials have some weight. So I think that helped Mike Stack here, despite the embarrassing problems he encountered as lieutenant governor. And then Nina Ahmed, who is a Philadelphian, was on the ballot and had TV ads and stuff. So I think that accounted for it partly. You know, one other interesting thing, as we were talking about John Fetterman, he's pretty much said that he has his eye on Pat Toomey, who will be running for re-election in 4 years, the Republican senator from the state. And he said that being lieutenant governor, he can be a partner for Governor Wolf and advocate for issues that matter to him. And he's got an eye on Toomey, and you can bet Toomey has an eye on him.
What does the lieutenant governor do, Chris Potter?
What's their
job?
Not a lot that people see.
Try and stay out of trouble, which Stack
is
unable to do.
And we should say that he berated, I think, and his wife berated berated staff. And I think Wolf distanced himself. But anyway, Chris, go ahead. Chris Potter, go ahead.
There are also, obviously you're a stand-in or something to happen to the governor. There are also some powers in terms of sitting on the Board of Pardons. It's a legitimate office. It's not a place traditionally where that's been a springboard to other office in general. It's more like the place where political ambition goes to die. But this is – John Fetterman is an untraditional guy in a lot of ways. And I'll say this too, just about sort of the Philadelphia situation. When he lost in the Democratic Senate primary in 2016, he and Joe Sestak split a lot of votes outside of the Philadelphia area, and that allowed Katie McGinty to roll up big numbers in the South. East, and that was kind of how she won that race. This was a different situation. As Dave said, you had the Philadelphia and the Southeast vote getting split between a couple of candidates. And John obviously performed very well here in Allegheny and southwestern Pennsylvania. But if you look across the board, he led in a lot of these counties because he now had a certain geographic advantage that he lacked in 2016. The tables kind of got turned there. So, he's obviously strongly positioned. He may well be in a better position a few years now to take Toomey on than he was before, because he will have had this race under his belt.
We are talking about yesterday's primary in Pennsylvania. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. I do want to talk about Lou Barletta taking on incumbent U.S. Senator Bob Casey, but let me read a couple of more comments. An email from Mark saying, I would have voted for Laura Quick in the 9th, even though the only ads I ever saw were for Danny Wolf, who did win, but we had tornado warnings in Leonardsville, so we didn't go to the polls at all. And there was some late night weather here in the eastern part of Pennsylvania. A tweet from Jonathan. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to vote because Pennsylvania isn't an open primary state. Pennsylvania is known for their voter disenfranchisement. When the system changes, then voter turnout will be higher. Chris Borick, that is true. We are a closed state when it comes to people that are not, certainly in primaries, people are not either Republican or a Democrat.
No, it's very true. And I've been on the show a number of times talking about this, Marty. I think Pennsylvania doesn't provide its voters a very good voting experience compared to almost any other state. And that closed primary part of the equation is real. I mean, I'll speak completely on an individual level. I'm a registered independent, haven't voted in a primary since we moved back to Pennsylvania almost 20 years ago. And so, yeah, a lot of voters can. And we could have a big debate. Is it the party's party, if you will, and they get to decide who gets in and who doesn't. And that might be in the interest of the parties, but I really don't think it's in the interest of a democracy and the broader electorate. So it's an issue that by the way, is getting a little more attention in Harrisburg recently. Some bills are being passed, being proposed on a bipartisan level. I'm still skeptical that their chances are all that good, but it's certainly an issue we're talking about more.
But it seems, Dave, that if you've got candidates who are not endorsed by the party, I mean, you've got more independent candidates, perhaps reflecting independent voters' thinking, whether that will in any way move things in Harrisburg.
Hard to know. I mean, I've got to say, I've always felt like if a party means anything, I mean, shouldn't you have the members of the party deciding who they want their nominee to be? It's not that hard to register as a Republican or a Democrat if you want to. And I'm not so sure that you'd want, like, just everybody to run in and pick who they want to run against on the other side. I mean, this is a debate people can have.
Sure.
I want to mention one other thing really quickly, Marty.
Sure, go ahead.
And that is evidence of a Democratic surge in a little-known race in Bucks County. There was an open state seat that a Republican state representative, Scott Petry, abandoned to become executive director of the Philadelphia Parking Authority, of all things. It's funny how things all tie together. In that case, a woman, Helen Tye, the Democratic nominee, narrowly won that special election, becoming the first Democrat to represent that district in 34 years.
Wow.
And I think it's partly that she's a good candidate. She was, by the way, black belt in the martial art of Aikido, I've learned.
she's going to need it.
But, yeah, I mean, so I think something is happening. You know, Democrats are turning out, and we'll see if that continues in November. Mm-hmm. But evidence that there's an enthusiastic bunch of Democrats out there.
Chris Botter, we haven't talked about the race for U.S. Senate. Again, the incumbent Senator Bob Casey is being challenged by Lou Barletta, who was endorsed by President Trump and I would say probably shares most of President Trump's views about immigration and other issues. How do you see this stacking up?
You know, this is an interesting race because we, of course, Beaver County, which is just outside of the immediate Pittsburgh area, was the home to Mr. Barletta's challenger, Jim Christiana, state mm-hmm. representative. And Christiana did, not surprisingly, won Beaver and he won some of the adjoining counties. But he actually did very well throughout the region. He won Erie County, for example, which was a county that was pretty key for Donald Trump. And I think what you're kind of seeing there, and I think some people were maybe a little been a little surprised at Mr. Barletta's campaign, that it doesn't seem more energetic. I mean, we hardly saw Lou Barletta
really
out here in Western Pennsylvania. Yeah, I talked to a couple of voters yesterday who said that they were surprised to see his name on the ballot because they didn't know who he was, because he's just been such a non-entity out here. So, you know, you take that, you take the financial advantage that Bob Casey has. This is only May. There's a lot of time between now and November. But Mr. Barletta has some ground to make up, both figuratively and literally, if he wants to be a serious contender going into November, I think.
Chris, do you think he runs as the Trump guy? I mean, he was an early and enthusiastic backer of Donald Trump.
I don't know how he doesn't run that way. I mean, it's his brand now. I don't think he could get away from it even if he wanted to. And I certainly don't have any sense that he would want to not be the Trump guy.
Let me follow up on that, because certainly when it came to the presidential election in 2016, Chris Potter, it was the Trump supporters out in your part of the state that really helped have Donald Trump become the president of the United States, frankly. Is there still that reservoir of support for him?
Yeah, I haven't seen much, you know, overt softening of it per se. You know, I think part of what makes it difficult is that, you know, we had this kind of key congressional primary here. But You know, and Rick Saccone famously called himself Trump before Trump was Trump. But I don't know that you can read that much based on the sort of debacle for the Republicans that that special election was. I don't know if you can read anything into what that says about Donald Trump's level of support. You know, Paul Mango clearly tried to style himself as a Trumpian candidate as well in the gubernatorial race. So it's hard to kind of, you know, look at the tea leaves here and say, you know, this proves anything one way or the other about Trump's appeal to Republicans. I will say, to Dave's point, because I guess part of what Western Pennsylvania's function is to pour cold water on Eastern Pennsylvania's hopes for Democratic waves. We had a special election out here in Washington County, which is just south of Pittsburgh, and a Republican won that race. It was to fill a vacancy left by a Democratic state rep who'd become a judge, and a Republican won that special election last night by about 10 points. So, you know, I think on a statewide basis, you can certainly say, especially in suburban areas outside of Philadelphia, yeah, there's definitely a lot of energy on the Democratic side. But Democrats shouldn't get ahead of themselves. There are still a lot of pockets here where the Republicans are very fired up.
Yeah, we've had this conversation before, I think.
We have. But this is Pennsylvania. Chris Bork, let me just have you weigh in on the race for U.S. Senate. I think people in the more eastern part of the state know Lou Barletta. He was the mayor of Hazleton. He's a member of the U.S. Congress. How do you see – and maybe quiet during the primary, but do you see something more – fireworksy when we get to the general election?
Oh, I do, Marty. I think Chris was right. He really didn't campaign that hard, especially in Western Pennsylvania. He didn't go after. Didn't really even acknowledge Christiana very much as his opponent. He was very nice to him last night in his victory speech, but tried to downplay it. And I think his polling probably told them that they were in good shape statewide and didn't have to spend a lot of energy or money on that race. But it certainly will be a different race. And I think he is absolutely tied to President Trump more than any candidate I can think of in the country. He was an early supporter of the president. The president has reciprocated by encouraging him to run and supporting him, doing robocalls for him this year. They are tied together as tightly as they can be. Wow. And this is where, if you want referendums on the president this year, I think this is where you're going to see the referendum. If the president's numbers are where they are now in Pennsylvania, if you look at the poll, somewhere in the low 40s, that's probably going to be a great anchor on Congressman Barletta. If the president's stock rises, it certainly is a lift for Barletta this fall. But even if it rises, we haven't seen the president's recipe for success necessarily translate to other Republicans in general elections and special elections that we've seen. And so I'm wondering that even if the president does have a bit of a resurgence this year, if that will be enough to help Barletta. So certainly I think he's got a little bit of an uphill battle.
Well, to be continued. My thanks to all three of you. Chris Bork, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
He's political science professor at Muhlenberg College. Chris Potter, thank you for joining us as well.
It's great to be here with all of you.
Nice to have you with us. And he's politics and government editor for WESA-FM in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Dave Davies, as always, thanks for joining us on Radio Times.
I'll go back to my desk now.
Go get some sleep. Senior reporter for WHYY. Let me just read a quick comment. Bill from Swarthmore. I was looking for candidates that had broad life experience and long track records of volunteer work, both in and out of government. That meant they were older and less charisma-driven pick. They were, in a way, a kind of anti-Trump, more public interest and self-interest, more ability to think than soundbite. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. Radio Times producers Debbie Bilder and John Ahrens, and starting today, Alex Stern, our third producer. She's been doing fill-in, and we're excited that she's now a part of our team. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us.